So we're here with Sergeant Mike Hoyland, the Scambia County Sheriff's Office, and we're just coming up on the anniversary of the attack on NAS Pensacola, which you were materially involved in the response to that. Sergeant, man, it's good to have you on the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Andrew.
So I'm not honestly sure exactly where to begin, so I'm just going to start with, we're coming up on the anniversary. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's one of those things where you look back at it and you go, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. I mean, you feel horrible for the people that were shot or, you know, murdered that day. But at the same time, you look at it and you go, you know, our agency, you know, did an amazing job that day.
Well, I mean, it's like a lot of things you guys do where your pride moments come at some of the worst times for other people, right?
Absolutely.
I guess maybe kind of talk to me a little bit about what happened that day, what you remember.
You know, it's funny, you know, much like in any law enforcement, I'd worked a side job that night prior to it. So from about, I think, from 1 to 6 in the morning, I was working a side job. I stopped in at Chick-fil-A on Navy Boulevard as I was headed to the precinct to do paperwork for muster. Got there, I think, 6:45 thereabouts, and another deputy, Deputy Green, came in. He was asking about something, and then the call goes out over the radio. And we looked at each other, and we were like, did they just say active shooter on NAS? And at that point, most of my shift is out in the parking lot getting ready to come in. We muster at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
So when by the time Deputy Green and I get outside, everyone is in their cruisers, the lights are on, the sirens are on, and we're southbound on Navy Boulevard at a high rate of speed. So, you know, we heard on the radio, building 633, of course. As many times I've trained out there, I don't know where 633 is, but once they said that it was near the chapel, I've been there. So it was like instantly, you know, that little road map in your head turns on and you're like, we're going to the chapel.
Once you got in the vicinity, I imagine it was easier to figure out where you needed to be.
Absolutely. Once we pulled up there, like we say in law enforcement, it's a clue. You see people running out of a building, that's a clue that that's probably the building you're headed for. And then you could hear, you know, the shooting going on. So immediately, I mean, even at that point, you know, I've got 22 years of experience at the sheriff's office, 17 of those. I've been on the SWAT team. We've done training out on NAS. We've done a lot of training out there. And we also, a couple of years earlier, had done a SWAT training episode for an active shooter at the hospital on Highway 98.
Okay.
So it's still rolling through my head as we're rolling out there that, is this like a training exercise? Because it truly didn't seem real. And even when I pulled up, and we're running towards the front door, and you see, you know, people out there that have been shot already out on the front steps, and it's still taking time to process that, is this a training, you know, scenario?
Yeah.
Once we got up to the door, and it was myself and Deputy Housem and Deputy Keebler, I've been in law enforcement a long time. I've done a lot of shooting. I've been around a lot of shooting. I've been shot at, but those were the loudest shots being fired inside that building that I've ever heard. And that's when it clicks in that, you know, this is completely real.
This is 100%. This
Absolutely.
Is happening. Wow. So what, while that's happening, as you're approaching the building, what are you seeing? You said you're seeing people flee. You obviously have your other deputies who are responding and you're hearing gunshots. What are you observing? Because that's obviously a big part of response is make sure you know what's happening before you start taking action, right?
Absolutely. As I'm approaching, we have one of the young men in the military that ended up dying that day. He's out on the steps, and they're trying to help him. I believe Captain Hogue was also out on the steps. He's already been shot.
That's the naval police officer.
That's correct.
Okay.
And so at that point, you know 100% this is real, and so all the little things in your head from all my training in SWAT and whatever is, now we got to do something about this. We got to go in and end this. So once I got up there, and of course Deputy Keebler had been on the SWAT team for about a year when this happened, so he had been through a lot of training with me, so I felt very comfortable with having him right there with me. Deputy Housem, who's worked for me for a while, was right on the other side. Then they came up on the radio and they said, we believe he has an AR-15.
Okay.
So I'm holding my, you know, my pistol, and I'm thinking, you know, like in Jaws, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
I'm going to need, you know, I need a rifle. I looked across to Deputy Housem and I said, I'm going to need your rifle. Because I knew I was going in, I was going to be the first one going in. My training and all that, I'm the one best prepared to go in first.
So you had your pistol, and he had brought his gun, his rifle out of the trunk or something?
That's correct.
Okay.
So he was definitely more prepared than I was at that particular time.
And that was Keebler had the rifle, or Hausum?
Hausum had the rifle. Now, Keebler also brought his SWAT rifle.
Okay.
So he had his rifle, Hausum had his rifle, and I was standing there with a pistol, and I was like, we're going to need that rifle.
So you asked him for his rifle. Obviously, you're the sergeant.
Exactly.
The decisions you make are the right decisions. He gives you his rifle. He pulls his pistol, I assume. You put your pistol back in.
That's correct.
And what happened?
So when we go in, it's, like I said, it's very loud. There's shooting still going on. And in those buildings, luckily, we've trained in them. So you know that the sound, you're not going to get a clear direction of where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. It's a block building. So the sounds echo all through that. Mm-hmm. So when we go in, it's kind of, we're in the center of the building. So it's almost like a T at the intersection mm-hmm. we're coming to. We have some double doors ahead of us. We have hallways going left and right. We have a victim on the ground. That's laying there, and I look at a couple of the guys that are in there, and I'm like, where's our shooter?
Mm-hmm.
And they keep pointing up, so we could see a little stairwell. Now, other deputies have already entered the building from the south side, and they've already engaged our suspect.
But you don't know this.
But I don't know that.
Right.
So I can't tell who's shooting, but there is shooting going on.
Okay.
So
can you tell that it's different weapons based on hearing, or is it just so loud and overwhelming that you're just trying to figure out where to go?
No, yeah, you can't tell a difference between a handgun or a rifle. And it, like I said, it was the loudest I've ever heard shooting going on. You know, and I don't know, you know, they tell you that based on your training and your years, your hearing becomes better and you start focusing down because things start shutting down so that you can focus better.
Yeah.
So I don't know what it was, but once I got,
and this is just constant. There's ongoing gunfire this whole time.
Yeah, we did get a little lull. Once we got the lull, I was able to poke my head out down the hall because that was the general direction people were pointing at.
Okay.
So I poked my head out down the hall, and you could see when I poked my head out, two deputies down the hall, about halfway down. This is probably about 50 yards. So they're about 25 yards from me. And then I can see beyond them. Now, at this point, I don't know what our shooter looks like.
Right.
You know, all I know is he's supposed to be armed with an AR-15, but I don't know what he looks like. So when I look down beyond the two deputies, I see, you know, someone in a flight suit. So
I'm normally a friend.
Right. So I'm trying to figure that out. Is this guy going to be with us or is he against us?
Yeah.
Well, when he starts shooting, obviously, once again, in law enforcement, we call that a clue. If you're shooting at me, you're probably not a good guy. So I tucked back. I told Keebler, I think our target's down the hall. I got to wait for the two deputies. When I poked back out, the deputies are gone. Just the suspect is down there, and he's now sending more, you know, bullets down our way. I was looking through a glass display case, and the glass just started exploding as the bullets were coming through. So I felt like at that point, he was kind of using the display case to figure out, you know, where his bullets were going. So the three of us, Deputy Keebler, myself, and Hausum, all stepped out into the hallway where I could get a good look at him. And with the doors...
With bullets coming your way.
Yes, sir. Yes, wow. Sir. But with the hallway down there, it's big windows at the very end. There's two doors at the very end. So it kind of silhouettes him, which makes it, just makes it easier to shoot a target.
Yeah. When
you have something very identifiable. A
clear sight picture.
Right. And so as he's shooting at us, and I realize he has a pistol and I have a rifle, you know, at 50 yards, the advantage is mine. And Keebler had a rifle, so I knew... And honestly, even when I was standing outside, I know people don't always believe stuff like this. The moment I got up there, I honestly knew we were going in to win. I never thought for a second there wasn't something in the back of my head that said, you know, we could get killed here.
Yeah.
It was never that. I knew we were going in. I knew we were going to take care of the threat. Honestly, you have, of course, you're amped up. But I wasn't nervous. All the years of training are like, they just start clicking in.
Right. It becomes, the whole, you guys always talk about this. You train to create muscle memory and psychological habit. And when you're in the situation, the whole point is to not be thinking, to have all that take over, right?
Exactly. And it slows down. It like starts to slow down and you can see it better, mm-hmm. feel it better. So once I got out in that center of that hallway and I knew I had a target, it was as simple as letting your experience go and fire those rounds down there.
Wow. So was it, at the moment you realized he had a handgun, instead of the rifle that you'd been expecting. That gave you a sense of, not relief exactly, but just a confidence that at this distance, all the advantages were on your side.
Absolutely. I knew we were going to win that engagement. Now, the only thing that crept into my head was someone saw somebody with a rifle.
Yeah.
So do we have a second one?
Yeah.
So once we engaged him and he went down, I told Deputy Keebler, we stepped to either side of the hallway to make sure that if anyone came out, they would have to pick up two targets. That's what we train in SWAT. You don't want to stay near each other. Uh-huh. So we separated, started heading down the hallway, and I kept telling him, keep 360 coverage. You know, Housen was making sure we weren't going to, no one was going to come up behind us. Mm-hmm. So we got down there, and once we got down there, I told him, set up 360 just in case. Mm-hmm. If there's one, there's probably two. And if there's someone saw a rifle, well, let's be prepared for that. And that's when we came across Deputy Lopez, because he was all the way down at the end of that hall. I tell Grant all the time, Deputy Lopez, you know, had he not had a malfunction that day with his gun, mm-hmm. he would have ended it before we even got a chance to go in. He ended up meeting the suspect in a stairwell, mm-hmm. and he got the first shot off at him and got him. And if he had not had a problem, I guarantee you he would have ended it in that hallway and it would have been done. But he has the issue with the weapon, so he now, you know, goes from the hunter to the hunted. And it just happens that as that guy comes out of the stairwell looking for Deputy Lopez, he runs into Deputy Tinch and Deputy Bortner, and there's a, you know, the small gun exchange there, and that's where Deputy Tinch gets shot. Mm-hmm. And then he runs into us, and of course we're loaded and ready to go. So
when you got down to him, was he, as far as you could tell at that point, he had already died? You'd already killed him? Or
once we started to move towards him, mm-hmm. there was no doubt in my mind, just based on all the shootings I've been around, there's a certain thing that a body does when it's on its way out, mm-hmm. and he was doing it. So you knew that he was, I knew that he wasn't a threat anymore. I knew he was done, and it was just a matter of time before he passed.
How did you feel at that moment? Because I know you were still concerned about an unknown potential second assailant, and you're still, the whole, everything is happening still, but.
That, my first concern was, is there another one? Mm-hmm. So we set up 360 coverage, and then when we started hearing that there were people that were injured in the hall, I sent Keebler and Housen over there. Housen is an EMT, or he's got medical training, so mm-hmm. I knew he could go in there and immediately help. So they went over there, started working on that. Deputy Lopez and I held where the suspect was, and once you kind of get a lull in there, and I know we were talking to each other, and with all that shooting going on, as loud as it was, I'm sure we were screaming at each other when we got down there, but it sounded like we were talking just from, you know, normal. And once there was that real quiet, I was like, okay, there's not a second person, because usually they'll be close to each other or he'll engage us, because now he's got us in kind of a little pocket. And there was nothing, and at that point you have deputies flooding in the building, FHPs coming in, so you have a lot more bodies, so that everyone's starting to do the job of looking for, you know, any more victims, mm-hmm. And potentially still a suspect if there is one.
And yet you had to switch into that mode of, I mean, we think the threat is over, but we're not certain, but we also got to make sure that we can save lives to the degree that they need saving, right?
Absolutely. That's the first thing, is once we had the suspect down, I came up on the radio and I said on the radio, shoot her down, because I wanted as many people to get in that building, because mm-hmm. that's our job. Our job is to, on that particular day, yeah, we ended up, you know, killing the suspect, but our job was to save as many people as we can.
Right.
So,
that's the SWAT mission, right?
And that's people, exactly right.
People sometimes think the SWAT mission is to go in and kill the bad guy, but the mission is really to save life wherever possible.
If we don't have to kill them, that's the perfect opportunity. We don't want to do that. We want to get as many people out alive as possible. So, at that point, our job is, we got the shooter down. If there's another shooter, we'll find him, but let's get as many people out now that are injured that need it. Like Deputy Green, who's on my shift, I mean, he loaded up two people from the building. He took them to the front gate, and when they couldn't find any medical attention right away at the front gate, he literally drove them to Baptist Hospital. So mm-hmm. he's got two people in the back of his cruiser that have been shot, mm-hmm. and he's getting them there, and he got them there quick. And so you start looking at things like, you know, I have my whole shift going around the building. You have other deputies from midnights, you have traffic, then you have FHP, all these other agencies are coming in and everyone's trying to work together to solve this. But you have people that, you know, like, I mean, I don't know what happens if Deputy Green doesn't get those two to the hospital immediately for medical attention. So
right.
All these little things that you have just add up to, I mean, when you look back at it, you go, that was truly, it was a horrible day, of course, but it was truly amazing the way we came together and worked hard on that day.
I know you guys train a lot for this kind of stuff, and you've got a lot of experience training for this. Were there things from this that would change or influence how you train in the future, or was it really a case of this is what we anticipate and the training paid off? And, you know, I mean, I know everything's going to have after action and adjustment, but looking back on it, it sounds to me like you guys were prepared and the training worked.
It's funny because I tell my wife and I've told other people, you know, there's the Bible verse where the Lord says, who am I going to send? You know, I need to send someone, who am I going to send? And it's always, send me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gone through my whole career. And when you look back at that particular day, when active shooter first came out, I was one of the first active shooter instructors at the sheriff's office. So I'm an active shooter instructor. I'm on the SWAT team. I have a lot of experience. And I show up there that day. When I look at it, and all the years of, I mean, I can't tell you how many active shooter classes I've been or taught or whatever, and you go back and you go, that worked almost as well as you could possibly do under those circumstances.
Yeah.
For me, I wish I'd brought my rifle, you know, from the very beginning, you know, but other than that.
That's a curiosity for me. Was there a reason you didn't? Or, because like you said, the other two had brought theirs and your tremendous experience. That's what my first thought is, you know, you had a pistol, but was there a reason that you didn't grab the rifle to begin with?
This will sound bizarre, but I've been a supervisor for so long. And for all those Star Wars people out there, you know, I kind of walk in like Lord Vader, where you're just walking in and everyone else has got their weapons out and their shooting's going on. And you're going to come in, you're going to do more of a, this is how we're going to do it.
You're going to orchestrate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to get there as quickly as possible and get up there and then start helping the guys figure out how we were going to deal with this. And then when it ended up, I'm at the front door, I can tell it's going to happen. And you're like, you know, I need that rifle. That's what's gonna make the difference for me. So hindsight, of course, being 2020, I wish I'd brought that rifle up there with me, but I'm glad Housam did.
So people think about you, and you know, you've gotten a variety of awards for your conduct that day, as many of the other deputies have. I mean, people talk about you as a hero. Yeah, I mean, when I'm sitting here, I'm like, this is, you know, it's unbelievable that I'm sitting in front of somebody who's got this level of accomplishment. And how do you feel about it?
For me, it's, you know, the guys that I came in with on the SWAT team, you know, Bane Custer, who talked me into going into this tournament, you know, becoming a SWAT member, you know, Commander Jackson, who was our team leader and kind of, he forced a work ethic on you that made you better.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look back at all these guys, when they say you did a good job, that's what meant the most to me. That day of it, when I was done and we had to do all all the things you have to do after a shooting, sitting on my front porch, and I'm just relaxing and kind of breathing, and the sheriff calls me. And you're like, so you talk to the sheriff, and then the chief calls, I mean, minutes after it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you hear in their voice, you know, how proud they are of you. You know, and it's like having you, and not that there's a big age difference, I don't want people to think that, but it's like having your dad call and say, hey, you know, you did good that day. And so that's what it's like. So to be sitting on the front porch and hear from the bosses and to know, you know, that the guys who helped train me and teach me everything, you know, are the ones calling you saying you did good. And that to me is the biggest difference, is just to have your peer group say you did it. And that makes a difference.
Wow. Well, I am, I didn't know all the details at all, you know, and hearing you talk about it, it's awe-inspiring. Honestly, it's overwhelming. My understanding is, if I'm not mistaken, there's video. Is there video from inside the building?
The FBI does have video.
Okay.
And I've gotten to see it.
I assume you've seen it.
Yes.
What did you think when you watched the video of this happening with you?
I can tell you this. Prior to watching the video, I was very proud of the way we did things. When I watched the video, it even gave me more pride because I watched him walk through that building like a predator.
Hmm.
I mean, there was, people can say this is what evil looks like, and I'm telling you, after watching that video, that's what it looked like. You know, so when I left after watching that, I was like, I am so glad, you know, we got to do that, because that was a wolf among the sheep at that particular time. No one was thinking anything was going to happen, and you could see on his face what he was planning. I mean, you could just tell it was just evil to look at.
How did your wife react when you got home and you were, I mean, she probably heard the news from the news, you know, and not from you because you're busy doing it. How did she take it?
She works at Myrtle Grove Elementary School. And I always tell her, I was like, I am very well trained. You know, I will be fine. And she said the same thing. She said that she heard that it had happened, mm-hmm. and she sent me a text, you know, are you involved? And of course, you know, you can't respond while you're in a gunfight. So it was probably, and after all the little paperwork, it was probably an hour after, you know, that I sent back to her. I was like, yes. And she said that she knew that I was going to be, you know, I was going to be fine. She wanted to hear from me, mm-hmm. but she knew I was going to be fine. And so when I finally saw her, you know, after we took care of everything that afternoon, you know, she was definitely glad to see me.
I imagine that first hug was pretty, pretty meaningful.
Yeah, so. Absolutely.
How long did it all take from the time you got into the building to the time it was over? These things always seem like an eternity, but they're usually pretty quick.
It was very fast. We got the call, I want to say it's 6:51, 6:52, and I want to say by 6:58, 6:59, I think I came up on the radio and said, shoot her down.
Okay.
So it did not take long. You don't have a lot of time.
Right.
You've got to, you know, assess the situation and then do something with it. Otherwise, you know, people still get, so once I got there and I saw, you know, what we had and we were good to go, we went. And so it was done quick.
Now, you mentioned earlier, and I know this, you know, from you personally, but you're a man of faith, and you mentioned that going in that you felt like this is going to work out for us, we're going to win. How does that faith play out for you as a, you know, law enforcement officer, especially in a situation like this?
It's huge to me. I always tell people, I'm not the guy that gets up and tells everyone you need to believe. That is not what I do. But, you know, this occurred on a Friday. So Sunday I went to church because we were on admin leave. Usually we would work, but we were on admin leave. And I told my wife after church, I was like, I now know what a rechargeable battery feels like. Because when I got in there, you know, the days of it, you get in there and then it just felt like, for lack of a better term, big warm hug. That's what it feels like when you're in there. And I talked to the pastor, you know, not long after that, and it makes a difference, especially on that day. And like I said, I'm not the one that sits here and says, you know, that you need to, but he calmed the waters that day. I mm-hmm. knew exactly what I needed to do, you know, so between the training and all that, I knew, honestly, I just knew we were gonna do it.
It's amazing how that how the Holy Spirit works at times like that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, Sergeant, just kind of on behalf of the community and certainly from my perspective, I know you've probably been told this 1,000 times, but I'm going to make it 1,001. And thank you. Thank you for training. Thank you for volunteering, for serving, for being the one who took the responsibility. And thank you for protecting the people in that building and our community.
I appreciate it. And all the citizens that... And even to this day, I mean, there's still times where you go to lunch and they buy you lunch. You don't know who they are. All those people that that looked out for us and always, you know, take care of us in the community, you know, we thank them for everything we do. You know, sometimes, you know, certain publicity out there doesn't shine that well on law enforcement. But when our citizens in Escambia County, it doesn't matter where you go, they back us 100%. And that is, if you don't watch TV and you just listen to our citizens around here, you know what people think of us.
Absolutely. Well, God bless you, and thanks for the time so much.
Thank you.